There were elaborate laws covering the matter of contracts for work. A contract must be in writing, and usually, as in South Carolina, white witnesses must attest it, and a judge approve it. In Florida, contracts were to be in writing, and failure to keep the contracts by disobedience or impudence was to be treated as vagrancy. In Kentucky, contracts were to be in writing and attested by a white person. In Mississippi, contracts were to be in writing attested by a white person, and if the laborer stopped work, his wages were to be forfeited for a year. He could be arrested, and the fee for his arrest must be paid by the employer and taken out of his wages. There were careful provisions to protect the contracting employer from losing his labor. In Alabama, when any laborer or servant, having contracted as provided in the first section of this act, shall afterward be found, before the termination of said contract, in the service or employment of another, that fact shall be prima facie evidence that such person is guilty of violation of this act, if he fail and refuse to forthwith discharge the said laborer or servant, after being notified and informed of such former contract and employment. Mississippi provided that every civil officer shall, and every person may, arrest and carry back to his or her legal employer any freedman, free Negro, or mulatto who shall have quit the service of his or her employer before the expiration of his or her term of service without good cause. And said officer and person shall be entitled to receive for arresting and carrying back every deserting employee aforesaid the sum of $5.10 per mile from the place of arrest to the place of delivery, and the same shall be paid by the employer and held as a set-off for so much against the wages of said deserting employee. It was provided in some states, like South Carolina, that any white man, whether an officer or not, could arrest a Negro. Upon view of a misdemeanor committed by a person of color, any person present may arrest the offender and take him before a magistrate, to be dealt with as the case may require. In case of a misdemeanor committed by a white person toward a person of color, any person may complain to a magistrate, who shall cause the offender to be arrested, and according to the nature of the case, to be brought before himself or be taken for trial in the district court. On the other hand, in Mississippi, it was dangerous for a Negro to try to bring a white person to court on any charge. In every case where any white person has been arrested and brought to trial, by virtue of the provisions of the 10th section of the above recited act, in any court in this state, upon sufficient proof being made to the court or jury, upon the trial before said court, that any freedman, free Negro, or mulatto has falsely and maliciously caused the arrest and trial of said white person or persons, the court shall render up a judgment against said freeman, free Negro, or mulatto for all costs of the case, and impose a fine not to exceed $50 and imprisonment in the county jail not to exceed 20 days, and for failure of said freedman, free Negro, or mulatto to pay, or cause to be paid, all costs, fines, and jail fees, the sheriff or the county is hereby authorized and required, after giving 10 days public notice, to proceed to hire out at public outcry at the courthouse of the county, said freedman, free Negro, or mulatto, for the shortest time to raise the amount necessary to discharge said freedman, free Negro, or mulatto, for the shortest time to raise the amount necessary to discharge said freedman, free Negro, or mulatto, from all costs, fines, and jail fees aforesaid. Mississippi declared that any freedman, free Negro, or mulatto, committing riots, routs, affrays, trespasses, malicious mischief, cruel treatment to animals, seditious speeches, insulting gestures, gage or acts, or assaults on any person, disturbance of the peace, exercising the functions of a minister of the gospel without a license from some regularly organized church, vending spirituous or intoxicating liquors, or committing any other misdemeanor, the punishment of which is not specifically provided for by law, shall upon conviction thereof in the county court be fined not less than $10 and not more than $100, and may be imprisoned at the discretion of the court, not exceeding 30 days. As to other civil rights, the marriage of Negroes was for the first time recognized in the southern states, and slave marriages legalized. South Carolina said in general that the statutes and regulations concerning slaves are now inapplicable to persons of color, and although such persons are not entitled to social or political equality with white persons, they shall have the right to acquire, own, and dispose of property, to make contracts, to enjoy the fruits of their labor, to sue and be sued, and to receive protection under the law in their persons and property. Florida forbade colored and white persons, respectively, from intruding upon each other's public assemblies, religious or other, or public vehicles set apart for their exclusive use, under punishment of pillory or stripes, or both. Very generally, Negroes were prohibited or limited in their ownership of firearms. In Florida, for instance, it was unlawful for any Negro, mulatto, or person of color to own, use, or keep in possession or under control any bowie knife, dirk, sword, firearms, or ammunition of any kind, unless by license of the county judge of probate, under a penalty of forfeiting them to the informer and of standing in the pillory 1 hour, or be whipped not exceeding 39 stripes, or both, at the discretion of the jury. Alabama had a similar law making it illegal to sell, give, or rent firearms or ammunition of any description to any freedman, free Negro or mulatto. Mississippi refused arms to Negroes. No freedman, free Negro or mulatto, not in the military service of the United States government, and not licensed to do so by the Board of Police of his or her county, shall keep or carry firearms of any kind, or any ammunition, dirk or bowie knife, and on conviction thereof, in the county court, shall be punished by fine not exceeding $10, and pay the costs of such proceedings, and all such arms or ammunition shall be forfeited to the informer. A South Carolina Negro could only keep firearms on permission in writing from the district judge. Persons of color constitute no part of the militia of the state, and no one of them shall, without permission in writing from the district judge or magistrate, be allowed to keep a firearm, sword, or other military weapon, except that one of them, who is the owner of a farm, may keep a shotgun or rifle, such as is ordinarily used in hunting, but not a pistol, musket, or other firearm or weapon appropriate for purposes of war, and in case of conviction, shall be punished by a fine equal to twice the value of the weapon so unlawfully kept, and if that be not immediately paid, by corporal punishment. The right of buying and selling property was usually granted, but sometimes limited as to land. Mississippi declared that all freedmen, free Negroes, and mulattoes may sue and be sued, implead and be impleaded in all the courts of law and equity of this state, and may acquire personal property, and chooses an action by descent or purchase, and may dispose of the same in the same manner and to the same extent that white persons may, provided that the provisions of this section shall not be so construed as to follow any freedman, free Negro or mulatto, to rent or lease any lands or tenements, except in incorporated towns or cities, in which places the corporate authorities shall control the same. The most important and oppressive laws were those with regard to vagrancy and apprenticeship. Sometimes they especially applied to Negroes. In other cases, they were drawn in general terms, but evidently designed to fit the Negro's condition and to be enforced particularly with regard to Negroes. The Virginia Vagrant Act enacted that any justice of the peace, upon the complaint of any one of certain officers therein named, may issue his warrant for the apprehension of any person alleged to be a vagrant, and cause such person to be apprehended and brought before him. And that if upon due examination, said justice of the peace shall find that such person is a vagrant within the definition of vagrancy contained in said statute, he shall issue his warrant, directing such person to be employed for a term not exceeding 3 months, and by any constable of the county wherein the proceedings are had, be hired out for the best wages which can be procured, his wages to be applied to the support of himself and his family. The said statute further provides that in case any vagrant so hired shall, during his term of service, run away from his employer without sufficient cause, he shall be apprehended on the warrant of a justice of the peace, and returned to the custody of his employer, who shall then have, free from any other hire, the services of such vagrant for 1 month, in addition to the original term of hiring, and that the employer shall then have power, if authorized by a justice of the peace, to work such vagrant with ball and chain. The said statute specified the persons who shall be considered vagrants and liable to the penalties imposed by it. Among those declared to be vagrants are all persons who, not having the wherewith to support their families, live idly and without employment, and refuse to work for the usual and common wages given to other laborers in the like work in the place where they are. In Florida, January 12, 1866, it is provided that when any person of color shall enter into a contract as aforesaid, to serve as a laborer for a year, or any other specified term, on any farm or plantation in this state, if he shall refuse or neglect to perform the stipulations of his contract by willful disobedience of orders, wanton impudence, or disrespect to his employer or his authorized agent, failure or refusal to perform the work assigned to him, idleness or abandonment of the premises, or the employment of the party with whom the contract was made, he or she shall be liable, upon the complaint of his employer or his agent, made under oath before any justice of the peace of the county, to be arrested and tried before the criminal court of the county, and upon conviction shall be subject to all the pains and penalties prescribed for the punishment of vagrancy. In Georgia, it was ruled that all persons wandering or strolling about in idleness, who are able to work and who have no property to support them, all persons leading an idle, immoral, or profligate life, who have no property to support them and are able to work and do not work, all persons able to work having no visible and known means of a fair, honest, and respectable livelihood, all persons having a fixed abode, who have no visible property to support them, and who live by stealing or by trading in, bartering for, or buying stolen property, and all professional gamblers living in idleness, shall be deemed and considered vagrants, and shall be indicted as such. And it shall be lawful for any person to arrest said vagrants and have them bound over for trial the next term of the county court. And upon conviction, they shall be fined and imprisoned or sentenced to work on the public works for not longer than a year, or shall, in the discretion of the court, be bound over for trial to the next term of the county court, and upon conviction, they shall be fined and imprisoned or sentenced to work on the public works for not longer than a year, or shall, in discretion of the court, be bound out to some person for a time not longer than 1 year upon such valuable consideration as the court may prescribe. Mississippi provided that all freedmen, free Negroes, and mulattoes in this state over the age of 18 years, found on the second Monday in January 1866 or thereafter, with no lawful employment or business, or found unlawfully assembling themselves together, either in the day or night time, and all white persons so assembling with freedmen, free Negroes, or mulattoes, or usually associating with freedmen, free Negroes, or mulattoes on terms of equality, or living in adultery or fornication with a freed woman, free Negro, or mulatto, shall be deemed vagrants, and on conviction thereof shall be fined in the sum of not exceeding, in the case of a freedman, free Negro, or mulatto, $50, and a white man, $200, and imprisoned at the discretion of the court, the free Negro not exceeding 10 days, and the white men not exceeding 6 months. Section 5 provides that all fines and forfeitures collected under the provisions of this act shall be paid into the county treasury for general county purposes, and in case any freedman, free Negro, or mulatto shall fail for 5 days after the imposition of any fine or forfeiture upon him or her for violation of any of the provisions of this act to pay the same, that it shall be, and is hereby made, the duty of the sheriff of the proper county to hire out said freeman, free Negro, or mulatto, to any person who will, for the shortest period of service, pay said fine or forfeiture and all costs, provided a preference shall be given to the employer, if there be one, in which case the employer shall be entitled to deduct and retain the amount so paid from the wages of such freedman, free Negro, or mulatto, then due or to become due, and in case such freedman, free Negro, or mulatto cannot be hired out, he or she may be dealt with as a pauper. South Carolina declared to be vagrants all persons without fixed and known places of abode and lawful employment, all prostitutes, and all persons wandering from place to place and selling without a license, all gamblers, idle and disobedient persons, persons without sufficient means of support, persons giving plays or entertainments without license, fortune tellers, beggars, drunkards, and hunters. If a person of color is unable to earn his support, his near relatives must contribute. Pauper funds were composed of fines paid by Negroes and taxes on Negroes. On the other hand, former slaves who were helpless and had been on plantations 6 months previous to November 10, 1865, could not be evicted before January 1, 1867. In Alabama, the former owner was to have preference in the apprenticing of a child. This was true in Kentucky and Mississippi. Mississippi provides that it shall be the duty of all sheriffs, justices of the peace, and other civil officers of the several counties in this state to report to the probate courts of their respective counties semi-annually at the January and July terms of said courts all freedmen, free Negroes, and mulattoes under the age of 18 within their respective counties, beats, or districts who are orphans or whose parent or parents have not the means or who refuse to provide for and support said minors, and thereupon it shall be the duty of said probate court to order the clerk of said court to apprentice said minors to some competent and suitable person on such terms as the court may direct, having a particular care to the interest of said minors, provided that the former owner of said minors shall have the preference when, in the opinion of the court, he or she shall be a suitable person for that purpose. South Carolina established special courts for colored people to be created in each district to administer the law in respect to persons of color. The petite juries of these courts were to consist of only 6 men. The local magistrate shall be specially charged with the supervision of persons of color in his neighborhood, their protection, and the prevention of their misconduct. Public order was to be secured by the organization of 45 or more militia regiments. Capital punishment was provided for colored persons guilty of willful homicide, assault upon a white woman, impersonating her husband for carnal purposes, raising an insurrection, stealing a horse, a mule, or baled cotton, and housebreaking. For crimes not demanding death, Negroes might be confined at hard labor, whipped, or transported. But punishments more degrading than imprisonment shall not be imposed upon a white person for a crime not infamous. In most states, Negroes were allowed to testify in courts, but the testimony was usually confined to cases where colored persons were involved, although in some states, by consent of the parties, they could testify in cases where only white people were involved. In Alabama, all freedmen, free Negroes, and mulattoes shall have the right to sue and be sued, plead and be impleaded in all the different and various courts of this state, to the same extent that white persons now have by law. And they shall be competent to testify only in open court, and only in cases in which freedmen, free Negroes, and mulattoes are parties, either plaintiff or defendant, and in civil or criminal cases, for injuries in the persons and property of freedmen, free Negroes, and mulattoes, and in all cases civil or criminal, in which a freedman, free Negro, or mulatto is a witness against a white person, or a white person against a freedman, free Negro, or mulatto, the parties shall be competent witnesses. North Carolina, March 10, 1866, gives them all the privileges of white persons before the courts in the mode of prosecuting, defending, continuing, removing, and transferring their suits at law in equity, and makes them eligible as witnesses, when not otherwise incompetent, in all controversies at law, and in equity where the rights of persons or property of persons of color shall be put in issue, and would be concluded by the judgment or decree of courts, and also in pleas of the state, where the violence, fraud, or injury alleged shall be charged to have been done by or to persons of color. In all other civil and criminal cases, such evidence shall be deemed inadmissible, unless by consent of the parties of record. Mississippi simply reenacted her slave code and made it operative so far as punishments were concerned. That all the penal and criminal laws now in force in this state, defining offenses and prescribing the mode of punishment for crimes and misdemeanors committed by slaves, free Negroes, or mulattoes, be and the same are hereby reenacted and declared to be in full force and effect against freedmen, free Negroes, and mulattoes, except so far as the mode and manner of trial and punishment have been changed or altered by law. North Carolina, on the other hand, abolished her slave code, making difference of punishment only in the case of Negroes convicted of rape. Georgia placed the fines and costs of a servant upon the master. Where such cases shall go against the servant, the judgment for costs, upon written notice to the master, shall operate as a garnishment against him, and he shall retain a sufficient amount for the payment thereof, out of any wages due to said servant, or to become due during the period of service, and may be cited at any time by the collecting officer to make answer thereto. The celebrated ordinance of Opelousas, Louisiana, shows the local ordinances regulating Negroes. No Negro or freedman shall be allowed to come within the limits of the town of Opelousas without special permission from his employer, specifying the object of his visit and the time necessary for the accomplishment of the same. Every Negro freedman who shall be found on the streets of Opelousas after 10 o'clock at night, without a written pass or permit from his employer, shall be imprisoned and compelled to work 5 days on the public streets, or pay a fine of $5. No Negro or freedman shall be permitted to rent or keep a house within the limits of the town under any circumstances, and anyone thus offending shall be ejected and compelled to find an employer or leave the town within 24 hours. No Negro or freedman shall reside within the limits of the town of Opelousas who is not in the regular service of some white person or former owner, who shall be held responsible for the conduct of said freedman. No Negro or freedman shall be permitted to preach, exhort, or otherwise declaim to congregations of colored people without a special permission from the mayor or president of the board of police, under the penalty of a fine of $10 or 20 days' work on the public streets. No freedman who is not in the military service shall be allowed to carry firearms or any kind of weapons within the limits of the town of Opelousas without the special permission of his employer, in writing, and approved by the mayor or president of the board. Any freedman not residing in Opelousas who shall be found within its corporate limits after the hour of 3 o'clock on Sunday without a special permission from his employer or the mayor shall be arrested and imprisoned and made to work 2 days on the public streets, or pay $2 in lieu of said work. Of Louisiana, Thomas Conway testified February 22, 1866. Some of the leading officers of the state down there, men who do much to form and control the opinions of the masses, instead of doing as they promised and quietly submitting to the authority of the government, engaged in issuing slave codes and in promulgating them to their subordinates, ordering them to carry them into execution, and this to the knowledge of state officials of a higher character, the governor and others. And the men who issued them were not punished, except as the military authorities punished them. The governor inflicted no punishment on them while I was there, and I don't know that up to this day he has ever punished one of them. These codes were simply the old black code of the state, with the word slave expunged and Negro substituted. The most odious features of slavery were preserved in them. They were issued in 3 or 4 localities in the state, not 100 miles from New Orleans, months after the surrender of the Confederate forces, and years after the issuance of the Emancipation Proclamation. I have had delegations too frequently come and see me, delegations composed of men who, to my face, denied that the proclamation issued by President Lincoln was a valid instrument, declaring that the Supreme Court would pronounce it invalid. Consequently, they have claimed that their Negroes were slaves and would again be restored to them. In the city of New Orleans last summer, under the orders of the acting mayor of the city, Hugh Kennedy, the police of that city conducted themselves towards the freedmen in respect to violence and ill usage in every way equal to the old days of slavery, arresting them on the streets as vagrants without any form of law whatever, and simply because they did not have in their pockets certificates of employment from their former owners or other white citizens. I have gone to the jails and released large numbers of them, men who were industrious and who had regular employment. Yet because they had not the certificates of white men in their pockets, they were locked up in jail to be sent out to plantations. Locked up, too, without my knowledge, and done speedily and secretly before I had information of it. Some of the members of the 74th United States Colored Infantry, a regiment which was mustered out but one day, were arrested the next because they did not have the certificates of employment. This was done to these men after having served in the United States Army 3 years. They were arrested by the police under the order of the acting mayor, Mr. Hugh Kennedy. The aim and object of these laws cannot be mistaken. In many cases, the restraints imposed went to the length of a veritable involuntary servitude. Professor Burgess says, almost every act, word, or gesture of the Negro, not consonant with good taste and good manners, as well as good morals, was made a crime or misdemeanor, for which he could first be fined by the magistrates, and then consigned to a condition of almost slavery for an indefinite time, if you could not pay the bill. Dunning admits that the legislation of the reorganized governments, under cover of police regulations and vagrancy laws, had enacted severe discriminations against the freedmen in all the common civil rights. A recent study says of South Carolina, the interests of both races would have been better served had there never been a black code. This would be true even if there had been no Northern sentiment to take into account. Economically, the laws were impracticable, since they tried to place the Negro in a position inferior to that which competition or his labor would have given him. But it is monotonous iteration to review the early legislation of the reconstructed governments established under the proclamation of the President. In most of the states, the laws established a condition but little better than that of slavery, and in one important respect, far worse. For in place of the property interest, which would induce the owner to preserve and care for his slave, there was substituted the guardianship of penal statutes, and the ignorant black man, innocent of any intention to commit a wrong, could be bandied about from one temporary owner to another who would have no other interest than to wring out of him, without regard to his ultimate condition, all that was possible during the limited term of his thraldom. These slave laws have been defended in various ways. They were passed in the midst of bitterness and fear, and with great haste. They were worded somewhat like similar vagrancy laws in northern states. They would have been modified in time. They said more than they really meant. All of this may be partly true, but it remains perfectly evident that the black codes looked backward toward slavery. This legislation profoundly stirred the North, not the North of industry and the new manufacturers, but the ordinary everyday people of the North, who, uplifted by the tremendous afflatus of war, have been a vision of something fine and just, and who, without any personal affection for the Negro or real knowledge of him, nevertheless were convinced that Negroes were human, and that Negro slavery was wrong, and that whatever freedom might mean, it certainly did not mean re-enslavement under another name. Here, then, was the dominant thought of that South with which Reconstruction must deal. Arising with aching head and palsied hands, it deliberately looked backward. There came to the presidential chair, with vast power, a man who was Southern-born. With him came inconceivable fears that the North proposed to make these Negroes really free, to give them a sufficient status even for voting, to give them the right to hold office, that there was even a possibility that these slaves might outvote their former masters, that they might accumulate wealth, achieve education, and finally, they might even aspire to marry white women and mingle their blood with the blood of their masters. It was fantastic. It called for revolt. It called in extremity for the renewal of war. The Negro must be kept in his place by hunger, whipping, and murder. As W.P. Calhoun of Greenville, South Carolina, said as late as 1901, character, wealth, learning, good behavior, and all that makes up or constitutes good citizenship in the black man is positively of no avail whatever. Merit cannot win in this case. The cry of the bewildered freeman rose, but it was drowned by the rebel yell. I am a Southerner. I love the South. I dared for her to fight from Lookout to the sea. with her proud banner over me. But from my lips thanksgiving broke, as God in battle thunder spoke. And that black idol, breeding drouth and dearth of human sympathy throughout the sweet and sensuous South, was, with its chains and human yoke, blown hellward from the cannon's mouth, while freedom cheered behind the smoke. Maurice Thompson.